His religious duties as prescribed for the household of Kshatriya. Such activities gradually cleanse the heart of a mundane man and free him from material contamination. So-called renunciation for the purpose of maintenance is never approved by the Lord, nor by any religious scripture. After all, one has to maintain one's body and soul together by some work. Work should not be given up capriciously without purification of materialistic propensities. Anyone who is in the material world is certainly possessed of the impure propensity for lording it over material nature, or in other words, for sense gratification. Such polluted propensities had to be cleared. Without doing so through prescribed duties, one should never attempt to become a so-called transcendentalist, renouncing work and living at the cost of others. Niyatam kuru karamatvam karamajyayo yakaramana sharira yatrapi chate na prasidyet akaramana. Perform your prescribed duty, for doing so is better than not working. One cannot even maintain one's physical body without work. Omiganta Randasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshramanatamiena Tasmai Shri Guruvena Shri Chidambaro Vishnam Stapitam Yena Mutare Swayam Rupika Dharmayam Dadati Swayam Patantikam Vachikalpa Trubhya Shakri Vasindhu Vyeva Chap Adhidana Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasati Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Yes, so as I said, it's very nice be here with you all today in Phoenix. Devotees from all over the northern side of Durban and surrounding areas. That's very nice to get together for the New Year's Eve and to focus on Krishna, focus in Krishna consciousness. Last year was the so-called millennium. Anyway, so we thought that so many of our devotees, well, we didn't know, but we speculated that so many of our devotees might go sneaking out to some New Year's Eve event or other, some New Year's Eve bash, or whatever you might call it. So we thought, why not have a New Year's Eve bash or something, program of Krishna consciousness, and in that way we keep all the devotees engaged in Krishna consciousness rather than have anyone, or at least reduce or minimize the numbers of devotees who might get deviated into some other less spiritual program. So it's very nice that you're all here. And this verse is also very nice because in this verse, a subject which is repeatedly addressed in Bhagavad Gita, that subject is being talked about. The importance of performing one's prescribed duty. Of course, if you're going to perform your prescribed duty, to start off with, you have to have one. If you don't have a prescribed duty, if you don't know what it is that you should do or could do, then, well, that is obviously a problem. So everyone, every devotee, there are many things. There are not so many things, but there's some number of things which, if we want to be Krishna conscious, if we're trying to be devotees, then we should try to get those things together. Like, if we want to be devotees, if we want to advance in spiritual life, then we should get together our chanting. I think you all know that, and we all know that by now, that in order to be devotees and to live spiritual lives, then the first thing we have to do really is get our chanting together. And another thing, if we want to advance in Krishna consciousness, then another thing we have to get together is following the regulative principles. These are important things. If we want to advance, if we want to become fixed up in spiritual life and really get some very noticeable and significant gain from it, some experience of upliftment and benefit and improvement in our lives. So, those are two things. But then, of course, the third thing we should read Srila Prabhupada's books that will feed our intelligence. That is something like food for our brains, in our minds. Our minds, when they're under the influence of the material energy, they naturally have many doubts. We may wonder, who is Krishna? Is he real? I have never seen him or met him directly. So sometimes a devotee, if they're not feeding their intelligence sufficiently, then they may have doubts like that, and the mind may question so many things. So, reading Srila Prabhupada's books, that feeds the intelligence and strengthens our convictions about what we're doing. One time, Srila Prabhupada called. He was in India, and there are a number of GBC members there. Senior men were there, and Srila Prabhupada called them into the room. There were two incidents which I heard of. In one incident, he just stared them in the eyes, really, and he said, "Are you convinced?" And you know, if someone does that to you, particularly someone like Srila Prabhupada, then if you're not really, you know, totally convinced, then there may be the tendency that the eyes just look the other way. Sort of. But You know, Srila Prabhupada just drilling a hole through these devotees' ears. Are you convinced? And they just looked at each other and couldn't say anything. And Srila Prabhupada said, I am convinced. And you must also become convinced. Then there was another time he called his GBC men in. And Srila Prabhupada said, I have a plan. We will take over the world in 18 days. And the devotees again, they just looked at each other, just couldn't. It did not compute, so to speak. And Prabhupada said, yes, I have the plan. We can do it, but you are not convinced. So he didn't try. So we have to feed our intelligence. And if we feed our intelligence by reading Srila Prabhupada's books, then all these doubts, particularly the pity doubts, and even all the doubts, ultimately, they'll all go away, and the mind will become strong, and eventually nothing will shake you in your Krishna consciousness. That's very advanced. But at least we should work towards it. We should work towards that. Take some time. That's okay. Take some time. But we should work towards it. In the meantime, we may get a little shaky sometimes, but we should work towards it. So those are three things then, that if we are to get ourselves together in spiritual life, then we should get those things together. Chanting, following the regulative principles, and reading Srila Prabhupada's books. Now here is a fourth thing. Everyone should have a prescribed duty. So look at yourself or think about yourself and think, do I have a prescribed duty in Krishna consciousness? So you figure that out for yourself. But if you haven't got a prescribed duty, what do I mean by prescribed duty? I mean some regular responsibility. No. It's all very well, and it's nice that we just walk in any time and say, here I am, can I help? That's good. It's a lot better than staying away until it's prasadam time, and then suddenly, here we are. We have come to the Sunday program. Of course, we come every Sunday, but just at that critical time. There are different levels of devotees. So, you look at yourself, see if you have a prescribed duty. And if you don't, well, try and get one. Prescribed duty, some regular service, which is your service. And, like a responsibility. Doesn't mean you have to be in charge, but something that you accept as your duty in Krishna consciousness on a regular basis. How does that sound? Does that sound okay? Okay. So think about it, and if you haven't got one, then get one. That will help you to advance. That will help you to advance. If you can get a prescribed duty. So how would you get it? Well, of course, you could go and ask Prabhanu Prabhu. That's one way. That's a good way. If someone is not so clear, what should it be? You know, we might feel, I don't want it just to be anything. Yes, we might be a little concerned to get some suitable prescribed duty on. We might wonder what sort of prescribed duty can really help me and help me to develop as a devotee. So then, of course, one can always discuss that with the spiritual master, with the older devotees, or even ultimately with the spiritual master, to try and understand what sort of duty will help me advance in Krishna consciousness. So anyway, the basic point is that prescribed duty, along with chanting our rounds and these other things that we've mentioned, having a prescribed duty is a very important part of Krishna consciousness. It should not be underestimated. As you know, in one letter, Srila Prabhupada said that if the bona fide authorities come up to you and they give you some service, that you serve Prasada, you lead the kirtan, the bona fide authorities. Srila Prabhupada said in one letter that you should take that Krishna personally wants you to do that. It is not just that they need someone to serve prasada and you just happen to walk along innocently minding your own business. And then they just jumped on you and they thought, yeah, we got one at last. Stick them in there and fill the gap. Some sort of... It might appear like that on the surface, but it's not. Krishna consciousness. Don't underestimate Krishna consciousness. Don't underestimate Krishna. Krishna is watching you. Krishna is watching you. You know, in America, in the Second World War, and even nowadays they do it sometimes, they have these posters. They have like a mascot for the country, sort of, called Uncle Sam. Have you heard of Uncle Sam? He's this elderly looking kind of, anyway, colonial type of gentleman, sort of like a cowboy kind of thing. And they have these pictures. They're trying to get people to volunteer for the army. So they have these pictures. Uncle Sam is looking you in the eye, pointing his finger. Excuse my finger. But he said, the poster says, Uncle Sam wants you. So, that of course, you know, that's just some kind of, I don't know, strategy for making people feel guilty and volunteer for becoming targets in the target practice in the war. But actually, Krishna wants you. Yeah, Krishna is there. Krishna is there, and he's watching us, and he's wondering, when will, ... fill in the name there, your name, when will Aman surrender? Oh, anyone, everyone, he's wondering. You know, Prabhupada said that when you take to Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada said that before you come to the point of taking to Krishna consciousness, then you have to come a long way. 8,400,000 species of life. billions of years, billions of years we don't know how long. So Srila Prabhupada said, when you finally come to the point of accepting Krishna consciousness or being accepted in Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada said that you are now standing on the threshold of eternity. Just like when someone's standing in the door. Sometimes people come to the temple, they look in through the door to see what's going on. So they're there and we try and bring them in. But Srila Prabhupada said that when you come to Krishna consciousness, you are standing on the threshold of eternity. And when you're standing on the threshold, you just have to step through. That's all. Just step through and you're there. Yes, you're there on the other side, in the spiritual world. So Krishna is very personal and he is watching all of us and wondering how are we going to surrender and trying to make different arrangements to encourage us to surrender. So Srila Prabhupada said that if you are given some duty by the bona fide authority, that means that Krishna personally wants you to do that. So it is not just some coincidence that you happen to be walking past when they needed someone, but this is Krishna. Krishna is entering your life. So we should get some prescribed duty then, because it means it makes our connection with Krishna stronger. Well, it gives us a connection. Of course, our chanting gives us a connection, and all these things give us a connection. But prescribed duty, accepting some responsibility to serve Krishna, that gives a very strong connection with Krishna. So here in this verse, Lord Krishna is making the point that we should all perform our prescribed duty and not be lazy and not try to avoid it. Srila Prabhupada said, Krishna consciousness is not a place for lazies or crazies. So don't be a lazy, okay? Don't be a crazy. But just try to get something to do for Krishna. And if you can't figure out what to do, then the devotees will help you. And you'll get something to do. Don't worry. Yes. Now, this point is very important. Don't underestimate this point. Here in this chapter of Bhagavad Gita, I think it's in this chapter, Lord Krishna makes the point that having a prescribed duty is so important, extremely important. He says that in the past, all the great personalities, they all accepted some prescribed duty in devotional service. He mentions King Janaka. Janaka was the father of Sita Devi. She is known as Janaki. So he was a very great person, but he accepted a prescribed duty. Well, his prescribed duty was to be the king. So he performed that prescribed duty with, you could say, like a relentless determination. Nothing could stop him. Nothing could stop him at all in performing his prescribed duty. And he brought up out Sita. He brought out Sita very nicely. Was that that frog in here? We had a frog last. Devotee. That devotee was lamenting. He was a devotee of Sita Ram. And he was lamenting that Mother Sita, she is the goddess of fortune. She is the most wonderful and most pure of all persons, the Supreme Mother. So he was lamenting, how is it possible that this demon, Ravana, was able to put his hands on Sita and touch her and grab her and kidnap her, physically holding on to her body? So he was lamenting, she is the goddess of fortune, she is so pure and wonderful. How is it that this demon, this dirty rascal demon, Ravana, was able to touch her? So Lord Chaitanya, he told that devotee, he said, let me think about it, I'll get back to you. So then he went traveling further on, and he found some chapters from the Kaurava Purana. And in those chapters from the Kaurava Purana, some interesting things were described. How, when Sita stepped through that protective circle made by Lakshman, that was protected by an Agni mantra, fire mantra, when she stepped through them, Agni took her. And on the other side, a Maya Sita stepped out. And it was the Maya Sita who Ravana kidnapped. Yes. And there is another description, a very interesting description, how before they had that competition where Lord Ram lifted the bow and strung the bow and broke the bow eventually. So they had this bow, it was the bow of Lord Shiva. And it took 300 men to lift it. It was very big and very heavy. So, one day, just before that event took place, where Lord Ram broke the bow. So one day, Sita was playing in the courtyard, playing some game with a ball, throwing the ball around with her friends. And the ball went up into a tree, and it got stuck there. So they were trying to shake the tree, and they couldn't climb up the tree high enough, and they couldn't figure out, what are we going to do? How are we going to get this ball out of the tree? So then Sita remembered that in the next room there is this big bow. Big bow. So Sita, she went in, picked up the bow, brought it outside, and used the bow to poke the ball out of the tree, and the ball came down, and they thought, very good. But then some of the guards came, and they saw, here is Sita. You know, she's like a rather delicate, cultured young lady, she's meant to be, carrying this bow, which 300 men are meant to carry. So anyway, they got bewildered. And when Ravana came, because he also wanted to get the hand of Sita, so he tried to lift the bow and string the bow and so on. So he managed to lift the bow about 1 or 2 inches. But it was so heavy that he just couldn't manage. And it came down on his fingers. And his fingers were just being crushed by this bow. And so Lord Ram had to come and pick it up, lift it up. So, just consider that Sita, she just picked up the bow and poked around with it and knocked the ball out of the tree. And Ravana almost got his fingers crushed by it. Sita, she is the deity of the internal potency, the spiritual energy. She is so powerful. Durga is just a little fragment, a little part of a part of her. She's so great. So how is it that Ravana, who couldn't lift the bow, could kidnap Sita, who just lifted it and played with it like it was a toy? So it wasn't the original Sita. It was a Maya Sita. Anyway, that's just an interesting point, a little off the subject. The point is that in the past, having prescribed duties have been recognized as being so important that even the great kings like Janaka, they all had prescribed duties. And Krishna goes on to say, O Arjuna, there is no work prescribed for me, for Krishna. How could he have a prescribed duty? He's God. There is no work prescribed for me. Within all these 3 planetary systems, and yet, still, I perform prescribed duties. Even Krishna does. He has no prescribed duty. He's not a Brahmin. He's not a Kshatriya. He's not a Vaishya. He's not a Sudra or a Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, or Sannyasi. He's none of these things. But Krishna says here that this principle of having a prescribed duty is so important that even he accepts a prescribed duty. Of course, Krishna, because he is independent, in fact, he's kind of flexible in his prescribed duties. Yeah, we know that. He's kind of flexible. But still, sometimes he accepts prescribed duties. Even this can be a problem, the fact that Krishna is somewhat flexible in how he deals with prescribed duty. During the Rajasuya sacrifice of Maharaj Yudhisthira, Sahadeva, one of the brothers of Arjuna, he got up because they had to elect a chairperson for the sacrifice, someone to preside over it. So he got up and said, Krishna should be the president of this sacrifice. He's the greatest person. So everyone agreed, of course, naturally. Everyone except one. You know who that one was? Shishupal. When he heard this, he just thought, oh no, this is crazy. So he got up and protested. You cannot choose Krishna as the president for the sacrifice. And then he started criticizing Krishna. Krishna had given him a benediction. Krishna said, you can criticize me 99 times to my face, and I won't do anything, but not 100. If you do it 100 times, well, you'll be in trouble. So Shishupala started criticizing Krishna. You might wonder, how could people criticize Krishna? He's God, how could they criticize him? Even one time, Prabhupada did a program in Paris at a university, and some of the communist students, they disrupted the whole program, and the whole Prabhupada had to leave. The whole program had to be completely abandoned, even practically before it began. So they were criticizing Prabhupada. And afterwards, one of the devotees said to Prabhupada, how could they criticize you? Prabhupada, you're so wonderful. How could they criticize you? And Prabhupada said, oh, that's no problem. When Krishna was here, they criticized him. So, to criticize me, it's not a big thing. So, that's also an interesting point. If someone criticizes you, don't worry too much. Particularly if you get into a slightly prominent position. It doesn't have to be big time. You just become, you know, the chief cleaner upper after that Sunday feast or something. And people will criticize him. So don't worry about it too much. Of course, if they say the right thing, then you can learn from it. But don't get into your head. They're criticizing me. How can they do that? So, Shishupala, he was criticizing. And one of the criticisms was that this Krishna, we don't know what is his prescribed duty. Is he a cowherd? He was. But now he seems to think he's a prince. He seems to think he's a warrior. And sometimes he speaks Bhagavad Gita and he thinks he's become a Brahmin. And sometimes he's a Brahmachari. He's just with the cowherd boys. And then suddenly he's dancing with all these girls in the rasa dance. So we don't know. Where does this man fit in? So how can he be the president of this sacrifice? Yeah. So, of course, that was Shishupala. He's famous for being envious of Krishna. But still, it's an interesting point that according to the Vedic tradition, to have a prescribed duty is very, very important. Because it regulates you in your connection with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A little later on, in the same chapter, Arjuna asks Krishna, what is it which impels people to perform sinful activity as if by force? People are apparently forced into doing wrong things. And Krishna replied, Kama Esha Krodha Esha Rajaguna Samudbhava. It is lust only, which is born from the mode of passion, and which is the all-devouring, sinful enemy of this world. But then Krishna explains how to become free from lust. What does he say?
Does he say you used to become a big renunciate, give up everything, live under a tree, give up your house and your job and your family? No. Krishna says you must regulate your senses. If you regulate your senses, then you can overcome lust. So anyway, we are just making the point here that to have a prescribed duty, to have a prescribed duty is very important. Even if it's just some small thing, but try to get a prescribed duty, something that you can do regularly for Krishna. And along with your chanting and following the regular ritual, reading the books, and associating with the devotees and so on, if you can get some prescribed duty, regular service, then that will help you to advance very nicely. So now we'll try to answer a few questions. Why do the initiated devotees use the danda stick? I don't really understand. The sannyasis use the danda stick. Well, danda means stick. Why do we use that? It's so that if any of you, any of the devotees get up to any nonsense, oh, we'll get you. What happened? Oh, yes. Just watch out. Okay. So, that's why we use the danda stick. It is the rod of chastisement. Anyway, that's just a little bit joke. Let's see. Krishna's avatars and expansions, such as Ram, Varaha, etc., are all spiritual, part of Godhead. They all have their own planet in the spiritual world, where they live and participate in pastimes for their associates or devotees. Just like Krishna, right? Right. Now, if we, due to lust and envy, have fallen down from the spiritual world, then we could have fallen from any of these spiritual planets, right? Right. Well, that life was not there. I just put that. Consequently, if and when we are qualified to go back, then will it necessarily be so that we will go back to whichever expansion of Krishna we came from? Or do we have a choice? Well, that's actually a very good question. It's a very elevated question. It won't become like, you know, something you'll have to worry about until later on in your progress in Krishna consciousness, but still, it's an important point. Yes, the fact is that we all have an eternal relationship with Krishna. It is already there. And we fell from it. It is still there within our heart. But now it is covered over so we can't see it. So as you become purified, then that, eventually that will come out. And you'll see, this is what I am. This is who I am, actually. This is my eternal personality, my eternal nature. So therefore, when you become advanced, when you become ready to go back to Godhead, generally the understanding is that you will go to that same place. that you came from. Now, the question here is, do we have a choice? Well, you have a choice. It means you can ask, well, not choice in, you know, that sense, like so flexible. You can just choose as you like. But it is a fact that you can ask. If you become attracted to some other service, then you can ask. And there are cases of devotees who try to change their particular position. Even the great Lakshmi, she tried to enter the Rasa dance, to stop being the goddess of fortune with Narayana, but to join Krishna in the Rasa dance. But she was not able to, because she couldn't give up her feelings of being the big important goddess of fortune. She didn't want to just become a humble little cowherd girl. I think I told you one time what happened to Kamsa. I told you that? You remember that story? Kamsa. See, to enter Vrindavan, you have to become a cowherd person. Yes. So Lakshmi, she is the goddess of fortune. It means she's like a queen or an empress. Big, big queen. So to just become a little cowherd girl, running around chasing cow dung. Cow dung. Not so easy if you've been a big queen. And there's a story about Kamsa. Some of you, I'm sure some of us, have told it here. How Kamsa, you know, when we read the Bhagavatam, we read how so many demons came to kill Krishna. They were all sent by Kamsa. But Kamsa never came. He was living 15 kilometers away in Mathura. It's just like he was living in Verma, just around the corner. But he never came to kill Krishna. But he sent all these other demons and they were killed. But he never came. Why? Well, of course, the understanding is that he did come one time. He entered Vrindavan to kill Krishna, but then Purnamasi, she is the goddess, Yoga Maya, controlling the pastimes in Vrindavan. She met him on the outskirts of Vrindavan and asked him, "So, who are you? And what do you think you're doing in Vrindavan?" He said, "Well, I'm the king, and I can do what I like." And she said, "No, if you want to enter Vrindavan, you have to get trained up." So she transformed Kamsa into a little gopi. Kamsa became a little 5-year-old gopi girl, but she still had the mind of Kamsa. But there was nothing she could do. She was just a little girl, 5-year-old girl. So, Purnamasi said, first lesson is, pick up the cow dung, make it into cow dung patties. Kamsa did not appreciate that. Second lesson, she told Kamsa, little gopi girl Kamsa, second lesson, you must now catch the cow dung before it touches the ground, while it is still hot and steaming. So Kamsa, and she had one stick. Kamsa, there was nothing he could do, or she could do, had to do it. So running, Purnamasi said, "There! One cow was lifting her tail. This is the system just about to eject the cow down. And Purnamasi said, "There, go!" And Kamsa had to run and try to catch the cow down. Often it gets splatters all over the place. So then Purnamasi said, "Okay, now, third lesson." And that was too much for Kamsa. He ran. He just ran. And as soon as he left Vrindavan, he became Kamsa again. But he never came back, because he knew if he tried to come back, he would have to do the third lesson. And he didn't know what that was going to be, but it would probably be pretty tough. Anyway, when a pure Krishna devotee dies, is that person buried or cremated? Well, that's also interesting. When a pure devotee dies, like someone who's very clearly recognized as a pure devotee, then their body is buried. But when, you know, any other, you could say ordinary devotee or whatever like that, when they die, then the body is cremated. Because the body of a pure devotee is considered to be worshipable. Yes. So that's what happens. Does one have a prescribed duty in relation to his or her existence in the material sense? For example, in the Grihastha Ashram, as a father? Yes. And you know, in the Bhagavatam it says, what does it say? I can't remember the Sanskrit. What is that? Pita nasasyat, janani nasasyat, daivam nasasyat, something else, nasasyat. Don't become these things. Don't become a father. Don't become a mother. Don't become a teacher. Don't become a demigod. Unless you can deliver your dependence from birth and death. Because if you can't deliver your dependence, then you have to take responsibility for them. Okay? So all you young people who may be thinking that, right, we're going to get married, we're going to have fun. It ain't so easy, folks. No. If you can't deliver your children, and if you're the husband, particularly, if you're the husband and you can't deliver your wife, then, you have to take reactions to that. Yes. So yes, in Grihastha Ashram, as a father, you have to make your wife Krishna conscious and your children Krishna conscious. So, not too much kuch kuch hota hai. No. More Krishna consciousness. What is the transcendental form of the Lord? That is the form you see in this picture. That is Krishna. That is his transcendental form. Means it's spiritual, beyond, it's not material. Such an ananda, eternal, fully blissful and fully conscious. What is the unmanifested form of the Lord? Well, that can refer to any type of form of the Lord that you cannot see with your eyes. When Krishna was here 5,000 years ago, you could see him with your eyes. But the super soul, there's a super soul in your heart. you cannot see with your eyes. In every atom, there's a super soul. So this is called unmanifest, because it cannot be perceived by our eyes. And what is the impersonal Brahman of the Lord? That is His spiritual energy. We all have energy. We can run and jump and do different things. So He has energy. But that is all pervading. That energy is impersonal. Any energy is impersonal.